Monster Man, bonus episode, January 2023. Hello, and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm taking a look at the monsters that I find in them, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Today's episode is a bonus episode, going out to my Patreon backers at all levels, as a way to thank you for your continuing support. If this is your first bonus episode, mostly I just kind of talk about what I've been up to over the month. That involves things I've read, games I've played, films I've watched, etc., etc. I don't know how gameable my experiences are this month, but, we'll see how it goes. So what have I been up to this month? Obviously January is a bit of an unusual month. It's back to work. I had effectively the first week and a half off, so I caught up on some reading and on some films. Some of that I actually talked about in my December episode. I am getting ready for a couple of big projects in February, most notably the crowdfunding campaign for my next zine project. It is going to be a sort of thematic sequel to the Pamphlet of Pantheons. So where the Pamphlet of Pantheons was a sort of easy creation guide for religions and deities, this one's going to be about soldiers and armies, and it's going to be called The Guide to Grunts. And it's got art by the great Letty Wilson, who has done both a cover for it, or will have done by the time it goes on crowdfunding, and also these great kind of like marginalia interior illustrations. So just like lots of little doodles of these fun little characters. I'm really looking forward to putting it together. So look for an announcement about that in a couple of weeks. But I'm also working on some other projects, including going to Edinburgh to participate in teaching this course on the gamification of historical settings, historical events. I forget what it's actually officially called. Anyway, so those are some things that are on my mind. As a result, I've kind of had to cancel some of my other engagements just because I'm getting ready for these and because work has got really busy. This is usually a very busy time of year for me. And we'll stay that way for about the first quarter to first, really up until May. I expect things to be pretty hectic, but it's not too bad. It's not too bad so far this year. I'm just trying to manage it. You know, one of the things that I started doing late last year, but that I'm hoping to try and continue this year, is to put more effort into dealing with my stress and like thinking about it rather than just toughing it out. And it is tricky because you have to kind of find this, like the thing that they've got me doing right now, cognitive behavioral therapy, is all about, I hope this isn't too personal, but it's all about, changing the way that you think about things. And that's fine if you accept that the problem is the way that you think about things. But so maybe I would be calmer and happier and like less, tired out if I had a different attitude to the amount of work that I have to do. But also I need to consider the very real possibility that the problem is the amount of work that I have to do. So what if you're not engaging in like bad thinking about your workload? What if you're overworked? So anyway, it can be both also. I mean, that's also possible. So I've been doing some reading. I'm maybe like 20, 30 pages from the end of the Romance of the Three Kingdoms. All of the original major characters are dead now. It is one of those interesting things where, although the book is very heavily fictionalized, it's inspired by historical documents. What this means is that it sometimes has these moments where historical reality, or a historical record anyway, collides with the demands of drama. So the book has decided for various reasons that Liu Bei, the person who established the short-lived empire of Shu Han, is the protagonist and is an embodiment of Confucian virtue. The problem is that the real life Liu Bei, maybe he was an embodiment of Confucian virtue, I don't know, but he did a few shady things. And the book struggles with reconciling that. It's also the case that the book kind of isn't as interested in what happens to people who aren't the sort of core cast of the early book of Liu Bei, his brothers Guan Yu and Zhang Fei, Cao Cao, Sun Quan, and Zhuge Liang. They're all dead by this point. Those six major characters have all died. And the author just doesn't really, the author, Luo Guanzhang, doesn't like go that far in establishing the new cast of characters, and then the novel ends. So the last chunk of it feels like a bit of an anticlimax, but this just, Lo Guangzhang can't help that all of this interesting stuff happened after the protagonists died. Anyway, it's interesting and I'm enjoying it. I also read Miranda Kaufman's book, Black Tudors. This was a book that was a little bit, like, not controversial, but, like, predictable. People were dismissive about it when it came out a few years ago. It's just, like the name sounds, it's about black people in Tudor England. Not that that was a racial category that necessarily existed, but people who were described as Africans. It's interesting, you know, Kaufman is essentially pointing towards a time when these people were understood as not being, you know, the same as other English people. They were foreigners. But what that meant was very different, I suppose. In a society where England at that time, where the slave trade was not really a thing, like there were people who had been enslaved among these people, but none of them were actually enslaved because of the different laws in England. Anyway, what was really interesting to me about it from a game perspective was the way in which it's different characters all had such weird, and to someone like me, who's not like a big expert on the Tudor period, you know, they had these very kind of cosmopolitan backgrounds, you know, people who had been in all different parts of the world. Many Africans in England had not come directly from Africa, but either from Italy or from Spain, or from like the Spanish colonial empire. They were products of very varied and exciting backgrounds. And to me, they felt a little bit like player characters. You know, they always have some like very elaborate backstory. And then you have to think, well, actually, yeah, lots of people in real life have that. And I think that's a thing that we do where we mistake averages for individuals. That we look at kind of like what the typical experience of a person from this time and place is. And then we assume that everybody's experience is like that. And in fact, there may not be anybody whose experience exactly matches to the kind of mean experience of the group. Anyway, whatever. It was good. Also read, I forget the author's name, a thing called The Women at Work in the Middle Ages, which had good like examples of women in medieval Europe doing all different kinds of jobs, but was not itself a very good book, I didn't feel. It made me want to read that author's reading list. This was a very good month for film watching. I decided it was time to watch a bunch of... I had this habit of adding, like, good movies to my list, and then I'm never in a mood to watch them. So I decided, like, listen, these are all these things that you will enjoy if you watch them, so you should just go around and do it, even if you feel like you only want to watch a Jackie Chan movie or something. So this month, in terms of, like, movies that I ought to have watched, I watched The Banshees of Inisherin. I watched Portrait of a Lady on Fire. The Menu. I also watched The Big Short, that, like, stock market film from a couple years ago, which is better than I was expecting. In general, I don't find these kinds of, like, this is an issue film, and it's an issue film about Wall Street, which, that's really struck against it for me. I don't usually find those kinds of stories very compelling, but sort of at an individual scene level, it was so fun that I was dragged along with it. I also watched some films that were not as good. I followed up Prometheus by watching Alien Covenant because, again, there are 8 Alien films and I've watched 7 of them. You know, might as well. It's bad. It's just boring. It's really repetitive. It's just the same stuff as before, but with this sense of like grandiosity that really doesn't help ground the monstery stuff. Like, one of the nice things about the first 3 Alien films, and they have their flaws, but especially 3, but one of the things about them all is that they're very grounded in kind of the pragmatic realities of everyday life. Even the firepower and gung-ho in Aliens is immediately revealed to be not all that useful. These tough guys, with all their bragging and talking about how every day in the core, etc., kind of just get slaughtered. And there's a certain, like, greasiness to it. I don't quite know how to put it, but the sort of focus on the little bits of kind of shipboard and military life that ground it. There's some of that in Alien Covenant, but I don't know. This Chariots of the Gods stuff, I mean, this was played out when it was in Doctor Who in the 60s and 70s, you know? I guess the 70s. Not so much in Troughton. So, like, something like The Banshees of Inisherin, such, you know, this character piece, this kind of thematic piece about, well, I mean, about a bunch of stuff, like, about what it means to be nice, about what friendship is, about how we cope or don't when human relationships or political relationships change. Like, it was all very good. I don't know what I take from that for game purposes. The Menu was very game premise-y-like. I think I kind of am okay with the Ralph Fiennes character, although he pushes a button that, like, he's normally he's the type of character I don't like, which is to say he's a character who cares what other people think to themselves in a way that I find extremely unrealistic, right? Like the majority of people who do harm, they do it because they receive some kind of benefit from it, or someone else does. You know what I mean? But he's so weird that I think you have to treat him as, you know, the whole film is so, and dreamlike's not the right word, but like he's clearly not meant to be a realistic human being. And I think that's how you do that kind of character, even if you can't always pull it off. So for instance, you know, I think there are versions of, say, the Joker, who's another character like that, that do pull it off. I think there's versions that don't. I think like Q from Star Trek is that kind of character. And I am on record as not being a big Q fan. But I thought it was good. It's all good actors. There were bits of it that were very compelling. What else did I see? Oh, Portrait of a Lady on Fire. I thought it was very good. I don't know what I can like take from it for the purposes of this podcast, but I enjoyed it. I watched the original Planet of the Apes from 1968. That was really weird. I had never seen it all the way through. You know, I've seen the sort of famous bits of it like everybody else has. But if you just sit and watch it, like it's so interesting how unlike a modern film of its genre it is. It's so contained in its scope and characters, right? I mean, counting the other two astronauts and the girl, it has basically seven characters. The three astronauts, the girl, Zaius, Cornelius, and Zira are really the only characters in the whole movie. And, you know, a few other bit parts, but I don't remember. I think one was called Maximus. And then there's like a mean guard. But honestly, there's really only four characters. Charlton Heston, Zaius, Cornelius, and Zira. And a few locations. And it's very slow build. Like, it's like 30, 45 minutes before the apes get into it, even though it's called Planet of the Apes on the poster. Weird. It's not good, necessarily, but it's weird in a way that I didn't expect. I've also been catching up on, I put a lot of Miyazaki films on that list that I hadn't seen. You know, I didn't really start watching those until, you know, probably later than most people. So I had actually never seen either My Neighbor Totoro or Kiki's Delivery Service. You may judge me as you please. That's just the truth. I hadn't. So that was good. I enjoyed those, obviously, because they're great classics. Although I do think that the world's agreement that Totoro is great and My Neighbor Totoro is only okay, if you see what I mean. That we love the character, the image of Totoro. And also, you know, My Neighbor Totoro is pretty good. My Neighbor Totoro is a great example of a narrative that basically doesn't have conflict in it. It's kind of like people, I've never played Wander Home. I have it, but I've never even read it because I don't get that much time to like sit down at the computer and read RPGs, and I only got the PDF. But that's sort of what I imagine a Wander Home game is like. Maybe I'm wrong, but that idea that you have these like little low stakes encounters that are important to the characters, or that way in which small things seem important to you when you're a child, which I guess is a very Miyazaki-esque feeling. I watched Dutch medieval film The Lion of Flanders, which is bad, but, you know, it was a medieval movie on Netflix, so I checked it out. It's not bad, it's just whatever, it's okay. It's not really important. And I watched Norwegian World War II film Narvik, which is okay, I thought. Yeah, you know, it does a good job of kind of, not necessarily sympathetic. I mean, sympathetic, I guess, in a sense, portrayals of characters who are collaborators, because it kind of focuses on the way in which they sort of wound up where they are without ever being like, heck yeah, I'll help out the Nazis. People put into impossible positions, maybe a little more dramatically here. Like, obviously, in real life, a lot of people who collaborated for status or money, you know, for opportunistic reasons. Whereas here, you know, it's about the tension between loyalty to an individual and loyalty to the community. But it was all right, I thought. Gaming-wise, my D&D game that I play in continues. We had a player drop out of the campaign due to scheduling conflicts, which is a bit of a shame. Kind of my character's, like, rival within the party. Not rival, but, like, this other character is very sort of, like, civilized. So, like, you know, it's like a city mouse, country mouse kind of rivalry where she's posh and fancy and I'm crude and rustic. So I'll miss that. And then my D&D game that I run, going along smoothly, I needed a scenario for a kind of a spacer. So the characters all got, they came back to their castle after having finished a series of, you know, adventures. And when they got there, there was post waiting for them. And so they read all their letters and they kind of like, each of them sort of advances that character's thing a little bit and gives new clues. As they decided to follow up, my wife's character, one of her things is she's looking for her cousin who's missing. He was in the army out there when the war was happening, but he's never come back. So she's looking for him, and she's found out that he's in hiding, and they're going to go follow up that clue and talk to this guy who lives in a nearby city. So I wanted something to happen on the journey, and I hadn't quite decided what, so I pulled out White Dwarf number 87 and just ran the classic Woofer-Up scenario, Knight of Blood, changing the stats out for this edition of D&D, and they had a really good time. It was a really solid one-shot, although because of the way it was scheduled and because my sessions are quite short, it wound up splitting over like a session and a half, basically. Now they're in the big city, and we're shifting to a social environment that favors some of the other characters, you know, the a kind of like low-life thieves guilds and like crooked antique dealers and whatever. And one character has a nemesis. So he's like a nobleman, and there's another like shinier nobleman who he absolutely hates. And my favorite thing about this guy, they're both dragonborn. And of course the guy he hates is a gold dragonborn, right? And he's like Hunky Brad, the captain of the football team. It's this guy called Abelard Aureus. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with him, except that he has like a slight tendency to forget the player character's name. He gets it wrong, and this drives him up the wall. But also, it's just that he's so great. He's friendly and helpful, and he's rich and important, and they just hate him, which I really enjoy. Also because the other PCs, both in and out of character, enjoy his discomfiture. And I ran a session of my Rogue Trader campaign, which is cracking along smoothly. Although at present, it's supposed to be like every month, but it's turning out to be about every other month. I think that's probably okay, you know? It's not my taxes, like I don't have to do it on time. I'm just excited. And I'm getting to paint a lot of things, including some very special miniatures that have been kind of sitting around for a while because I didn't have like a motivation to go and get at them, but now I do. So yeah, overall, I'm feeling pretty good about the game and world. Oh, I also played another session in that irregular Call of Cthulhu campaign that I'm in, which is based on that 80s Call of Cthulhu scenario, by which I mean it's set in the 80s, the Dare. We then followed it up with, you know, rejoining those characters some years later in the 1990s with a 90s adaptation of a Call of Cthulhu scenario that is actually from the 80s, as we hunted for the reason behind a mysterious disappearance. So it's kind of like an It vibe, right? Where you start, you know, you're kids and then you come back as adults. But yeah, no, I'm having a good time. It is, I don't know, it's kind of like a nice low pressure feeling for me. I don't quite know how to describe it, but it's a familiar genre. We're accumulating clues, we're talking to people, we're staking out spooky locations and writing down what we see. You know, there's a certain comforting quality to that genre. It's so familiar to me. My D&D campaigns feel the same way. But like in the one I run and in the Rogue Trader game, there's like a certain amount of pressure. Like when you're the GM, I don't know, you feel like you feel a desire to perform, I guess. Yeah, but I don't know. This game, I'm really enjoying it. Also, it's infrequent and no one seems to mind, which is also nice. Like we have scheduling fusses, but they're quite like low stakes. I was expecting to enjoy it less, as I think I said last time, than I actually am because of my like Call of Cthulhu burnout, but I think this is a good way to get back into it. So overall, I'd say game is going pretty well. So obviously in the future, the big like upcoming thing is the Guide to Grunts. The crowdfunder is going to start in a couple of weeks. I don't know the exact date just yet because it sort of depends on when I have everything finished, you know, maybe get the cover art back. All of these things are proceeding as they proceed, and as long as I launch sometime in February, I'm perfectly happy with it. I haven't really had time to do any of the like networking or promoting that's necessary, but we'll get to it when we get to it. That's the big thing coming from me, but I hope that I'll have some other announcements in the months following. So keep an ear open for those. You'll hear about them here first. And yeah, that's kind of what I've been up to. As always, I hope that you enjoyed this little look behind the scenes, what's going on here at Monster Man Towers. You know, we're nearly done with Monstrous Manual in the main series, and I think I'm going to follow that up with a run of all special episodes, you know, Oops All Specials, just to kind of clear the deck a little bit, get us back in sync for the rest of the year. And after that, I might do a few interseason episodes before we start on whatever our new book is. But whatever it is, it's going to be right here on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening, and thank you very much for supporting Monster Man on Patreon. If you've got a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, why not get in touch? I'm on Twitter as @GonzoHistory, on Mastodon as GonzoHistory@dice.camp, or you can find me on Instagram @MonsterManGonzo, or drop me an email, GonzoHistory@gmail.com. Our theme music is an extract from Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, and is used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Our cover art is by Ray Otis. Thanks for listening, and please join me next time for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great.